This is World on Three with Marianne Kennedy, and now it's time for the first of two sessions recorded for the programme recently in America, close to the Appalachian Mountains. 100 years ago, in the summer of 1916, English folk song collector Cecil Sharp travelled to the United States on the first of several tours collecting songs from the people of the Appalachians. He was accompanied by his assistant, Maud Carpelees, and together they collected over 1,600 songs, which they published as the monumental collection, Folk Songs from the Southern Appalachians. In January this year, Andy Kershaw followed Sharp's journey through the mountains, hearing some of the songs he collected in versions by singers of today. Later on, we'll have some traditional unaccompanied singing from Virginia. But first, let's head for American music capital, Nashville, Tennessee, and the home of guitarist David Rawlings and singer Gillian Welsh.
Cecil Sharp recorded a number of variants of that song on his travels around the Appalachians. One sung by Mrs. Ellie Johnson in Hot Springs, North Carolina, on September the 15th, 1916, and a few others. But the one you were just listening to, recorded just now, January the 3rd, 2016, at the home in Nashville, Tennessee, of Gillian Welsh. Gillian, it's lovely to see you. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
When did you first come across Single Girl?
I probably first heard Carter Stanley do it.
The Stanley Brothers.
Of the Stanley Brothers, yeah. The
bluegrass band.
Yeah. But this is the first time I've seen this text, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't seen his collected version from 1916.
And yours again is, yeah, and I was looking at these as you were singing it. Yours again is...
Is there one that's closer to the one I do?
It was like bits from each one.
Okay. Oh, here we go. Miss Abby Mosley. I sort of do an amalgamation of two of these. Neat and fine, I separate those into two different verses. Nice and neat is mine. Rhymes with no shoes upon her feet. I probably got some technically wrong, but that's not the point. You know, that's why there's different variations of the folk songs.
How did you come to this music? Because You started out your musical career. Many people won't...
I came to it in a funny way.
Many people won't be aware of this, but you used to play bass in a goth band, didn't you, at the start of your musical career?
Yeah,
then,
but
then you were the drummer in a psychedelic surf band.
I was.
Where did the Damascene conversion to...
No, the folk music came first.
Oh, go on.
I grew up going to a kind of alternative education school that was started by a bunch of progressives and hippie types.
In Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Right.
And the teachers played acoustic guitar, and they taught us folk songs. So I first heard these songs orally from music teachers and teachers, and I learned to sing them before I'd ever heard the Carter Family or Woody Guthrie. I learned them out of songbooks, and I learned them from other singers.
What did you hear in these songs that, I suppose, spoke to you? Somebody from a generation distanced by...
It doesn't matter. That's...
The best part of a century.
That's the thing about folk music. It's universal. It's timeless. I think some people get put off by a vocabulary, maybe, that they're not used to. But if you connect with it, you realize they're human stories. I just felt like these songs were just rife with wisdom and knowledge, and they were offering
lessons about life.
Lessons about life, and you know, I was a modern girl. You know, I'm grown up listening to punk rock, and the unflinching subject matter of these songs, the sometimes dark, sometimes tragic, sometimes brutal and murderous content really appealed to me because I recognized that that also was a truth.
You mentioned the Carter Family, and the Carter Family were among the first to popularise these songs, the kind of songs that Cecil Sharp collected. No recording gear when he went round the Appalachians, he was simply writing them down. But then, within a few years, you had commercial record companies, and then you had the explosion of radio. Here we are, sitting in Nashville.
Here we are.
In Music City, Country Music City, USA. Do you think the coming together of those things, Gillian, gave us eventually country music?
Definitely. I mean...
It all came from those songs that Sharp was collecting.
Yeah, it's basically those ballads and those melodies and all that stuff that came across the Atlantic mixed with the African influence when it got here, from the black Americans. When you combine those two things, that's how you get Hank Williams. You combine the blues with those folk songs. And that's... ta-da! And thank goodness, you know, it's a beautiful musical form.
Well, you and David plays another one from the Cecil Sharp collection. Which one are you going to do this time?
Again, this is something we just play in our living room. I've never performed this.
You've not recorded this before?
No. I've never even played it on stage. These are songs for around the house. This is stuff that kind of informs everything else that we do.
And what's this one?
Be played on stage. This is The Cruel Mother.
Go on, give us a quick synopsis of The Cruel Mother.
Oh, okay. It's a chick who's got a thing for this guy who works for her dad, and he's after her and after her, and finally they get it on, and they do the deed. She gets knocked up. She, I guess, has twins, and she kills them so she can go on.
She kills the babies.
She kills the babies so she can go on with her life. This would have been a major inconvenience for her. Knocked up as an unwed mother. So she kills the babies and buries them and goes home, and on the way home she sees a vision. She sees ghosts or something, two little babies. Maybe what her children would have grown up to be, playing ball. And she speaks to them, and she kind of says, tell my future, what kind of death, what kind of life am I going to have? And they tell her, you know, in a poetic terms, you know, 7 years free, basically. 7 and 7, 14 years free. Oh, and then 7 years of worry and warning, and then 7 years in hell. So, yeah, it's a good story.
Well, thanks to Cecil Sharp. This is Gillian Welsh and David Rawlings with an everyday tale of double infanticide. This is The Cruel Mother.
There was a lady lived in York. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, who fell in love with her father. And he courted her for a year and a day. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, and he has stole her heart away. Down she leaned her back up against a thorn. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, and she has had two pretty babes born. She took a penknife keen and sharp. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, and she has stabbed it to their hearts. And she laid them down neath a marble stone. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, and she has gone as a maiden. And she walked home to her father's hall. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, she spied two babes a-playing. She said, young babes, tell me no lie. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh, what kind of death am I to die? Down by the green woods side. It's 7 years of fish in the flood. Oh, the Rose and the Lindsay, oh. It's 7 years a bird in the wood. Down by the greenwood side, oh. And 7 years a tongue in the warning bell.
Oh, these damn freight trains, I don't know how you live with them, Gillian.
They go by.
I'd love that sound outside my house. They go by what?
They go by every night.
Well, it was always a railway town, Nashville, yeah. Wasn't it? Anyway, that was The Cruel Mother, performed by Gillian Welsh and David Rawlings at Gillian's home here in Nashville. And Cecil Sharp again got quite a number of versions of that.
I know, I'm looking over your shoulder here at his text.
One by Mrs. Doc Pratt from at Hindman, or Hindman, Knott County, Kentucky, on September the 22nd, 1917.
Yeah, quite a few different verses than what I heard. I think I first heard Judy Collins sing this, and there's no telling where the chords are that we played, where we got them from. You know, so a lot of these ballads, it'd be hard to even say that they had chords.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? They're just...
Well, look, most of them would have been sung and accompanied.
You just sung, yeah.
I think if people had instruments when he was doing this, it was quite unusual. Another one there by Mrs. Emily T. Snipes at Marion, North Carolina, on September the 5th, 1918, during the last of his three collecting trips. It was almost tragic, wasn't it, that he went round doing this just before the innovation of sound recording came along. But remarkable that he was there with his musical notation book, writing down on musical staves.
And
he
surely got something different, you know, than he would have gotten with recording equipment, you know.
Go on, in what sense do you think that he had an advantage?
It certainly would have affected the locals that he was approaching. Some of them wouldn't have been forthcoming.
Right, he'd come in with a load of intimidating equipment.
Absolutely, they would have been afraid and, you know.
You do see those pictures of when, I can never remember which was the senior Lomax, John R. Allen, when he went round in places.
His great big.
In Louisiana in the 30s. He had this enormous disc-cutting machine
monster,
built
on
the top of his car. Anyway, these type of songs of been a true inspiration for you, haven't you? I mean, over the last 20 years or so, you've built a very successful career and become hugely popular by not only singing some of the originals, but you write songs very much in this style, in this tradition, don't you?
I mean, this is definitely the door through which I walked. This whole body of work, this tradition is kind of what Dave and I come out of. And feel very connected to this day, you know. For people who are deep inside this stuff, they'll be easily able to trace little tidbits of other songs and other melodies
in
our work, for sure, you know. And no shame in that. It's like that's how it's done. That's how the tradition works. Is all these songs, you'll have noticed, they cross-pollinate each other. A verse from one song will appear in another song, you know. So we just do the same thing.
Well, play us an example of a song that you wrote inspired by the songs we find in the Cecil Sharp songbook.
Well, the song of mine that's probably closest to this tradition is probably Orphan Girl, which is funny because it's one of my earliest songs, and it's, in a way, when I was still closest to this tradition, you know. I was just living and breathing these songs at that time. For one thing, because as you write more of your own songs, then you kind of get into your own tradition. Do you know what I mean? But Orphan Girl was literally one of my first songs.
Oh, well, do it for us now, then.
Okay.
Highway, but she my troubles. Will you go my way? I had no mother, no father.
All right.
Gillian Welsh and David Rawlings playing at home in Nashville, Tennessee, in the company of Andy Kershaw, following in the footsteps of folk song collectors Cecil Sharp and Maud Carpelees. It's the first of a set of full-length sessions from the trip that we're going to play over this week and next, and all the World on 3 sessions are available, as ever, to download as podcasts from the Radio 3 website. So let's return to the States now, and talking about Appalachian musicians, we're going to enjoy another of Andy Kershaw's sessions, recordings of songs collected by Cecil Sharp and his assistant Maud Carpelees on their visits to the Appalachians 100 years ago this year. This session is being broadcast for the first time. It was recorded with the young singer Elizabeth Laprelle at her home in Virginia, starting with a recording, though, that influenced her own singing, an excerpt from the song Lord Randall.
When you have all your supper, John Randolph, my son. When you have all your supper, pray tell me, little one, how do you soup and vinegar for to make my bed sound? Mother, I'm sick to heart and I want to lie down.
Well, that was Mrs. Oscar Allen of Lynchburg, Virginia, singing Lord Randall, recorded by Maud Carpelees when she came back to the Appalachians in the early 1950s to make audio recordings, of course, having travelled around here with Cecil Sharp between 1916 and 1918. And someone who was inspired by the Sharp collection in this part of the country and those Maud Carpelees recordings is Elizabeth Laprelle, who lives in the isolated settlement, very aptly named, of Rural Retreat, Virginia. And we're in the delightful little glade next to Elizabeth's house, close to her parents' farm, and standing on a rickety wooden bridge over a creek that you can probably hear babbling away underneath us. And Elizabeth lives here with a number of goats that were trying to force their way into a kitchen just a few minutes ago. Elizabeth, how did you first come across the songs that Cecil Sharp collected and Maud Carpelees later made audio recordings of?
Well, I got interested in ballads as a young teenager, or really throughout my childhood. My mom was interested in folk music and she sang a lot around the house.
Because you're only 28 now, we should point
out. I'm 28 now. Right. It doesn't feel only to me.
But many kids, or most kids, reject the music of their parents. You clearly didn't do that.
No, it's more a case of my parents rejecting the music that I bring home in some cases. But with folk music, yeah, that's always been something I've been very, very happy to share with my folks, and very grateful to grow up in a house that has music in it. And I'd always been interested in singing. So then I went to a music camp, and I took a class from Sheila K. Adams, who I understand you're going to speak to soon, and learned a lot from her.
Is that when your particular interest in the singing of the Appalachians started?
Yeah, coupled with the fact that I live here. So I heard a lot of mountain music growing up, just kind of from all sides, but I was really captivated by old ballads, particularly these wonderful stories that still transport me.
And now you're making a living performing them yourselves, aren't you? I know you're actually going off to do a concert later today.
Yes, a few years ago, well, actually almost 5 years ago, I joined a duo called Anna and Elizabeth with a woman named Anna Roberts-Javalt, and we've made it our work to bring ballads to lots of unexpected places, starting here in southwestern Virginia.
Is it one of those cases that the community in which this music was originally made, that community has forgotten all about this stuff?
I'd definitely say that in this area, where the string band music has survived very, very well from centuries past, ballad singing has not.
Right.
Sitting down to sing ballads to entertain each other is apparently not something that a lot of people do around here.
But playing guitars, fiddles, banjo did survive.
Oh, very much so, and dancing, very much so.
Right. Well, give us one of your favourites from the Cecil Sharp collection. What are you going to sing for us?
All right, this is another from Mrs. Oscar Allen from Lynchburg, Virginia. The Two Old Crows.
Two old crows sat in a tree. Lottie, skip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. Two old crows sat in a tree. Was just as black as crows could be. Lottie, lottie, skip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. One old crow said to his mate, Lottie, hip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. One old crow said to his mate, what shall we do for food to eat? Lottie, lottie, hip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. Yonder lies a horse in yonder's lane. Lottie, skip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. Yonder lies a horse in yonder's lane. His rider being not very long slain. Lottie, lottie, skip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. We'll press our feet on his breastbone. Lottie, skip-bye, hottie, ho-ho. We'll press our feet on his breastbone and peck his eyes out one by one. Lottie, lottie, skip-bye, hottie, ho-ho.
Fabulous. Hey, I'll tell you, you don't sound 28 when you sing that. That song puts years on you.
I've learned from so many field recordings of older people. I often wonder what it would be like to hear a recording of a young person.
What are the characteristics, Elizabeth, of Appalachian singing?
Well, I do think it varies a little bit regionally, but...
You mean it would be different here to... the singing that you might hear in Tennessee or North Carolina, for example?
Yeah, stylistically. And I could, it's a small sample size, so, you know, I could just be hearing a family resemblance, for example. But when I first met Sheila Kay and heard her singing, one of the things that first grabbed me about it was the amazing style and ornamentation. She sings with a lot of power and these really beautiful trills and breaks that I'm sure she can talk about very well.
Those little skips and embellishments.
Yeah, and then when you go back and listen to recordings of the people that she learned from, you hear those same stylistic things, and that's one of the things that I really loved about learning from her. When I went back and started listening to recordings of Virginia singers, it wasn't quite the same. There tended to be, and again, this is a big generalization because there just weren't that many people recorded, but tend to be their voices kind of placed higher, almost a little flutier, and with less of those really complex trilling ornaments, less of those skips. But when you're talking about unaccompanied singing, which the ballad singing was almost exclusively, you hear this focus on the words and a freeness with meter, and I think that's really important, or to me anyway, that's one of the most important things about the way ballads were sung and the way I like to sing them. It's a storytelling art as much as it is a musical one, maybe even more so. And so the focus is on the words rather than on, you know, keeping a beat. And I, musically, it seems like I almost hear more in the intervals than I do actual chords. You know, you might hear a melody, and I know some people can really imagine chords behind it, but I feel like I hear more in the relationship between one note that comes after another, if that makes sense, and the contrast you hear there.
Go on, Elizabeth, sing us another song from the Sharp collection. What do you fancy doing?
It's a version of, I first heard it as titled Jackaro, called Jackie Went A-Sailing, and this is from...
We collected a lot of variants of this, I think more than 20.
Yeah, I love imagining people, you know, 100 years or more back singing so many songs about the ocean when they're in the mountains like this, having maybe never seen a body of water bigger than
never seen
this
the sea,
creek. Yeah. So this is Jackie Went A-Sailing from Victoria Morris.
Jackie went a-sailing with a weak and troubled mind to leave his native country and darling girl behind. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. She dressed herself in men's array and apparel she put on and joined up with the army a-marching along. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Your cheeks are red and rosy, your fingers neat and small, your waist too slim and slender to face the cannonball. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. I know my waist is slender, my fingers neat and small, but it would not change my countenance to see 10,000 fall. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. The battle being ended, she rode the circle round, and through the dead and dying, her darling dear she found. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. She picked him up all in her arms, she carried him down to town, and sent for a London doctor to heal his bleeding wounds. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. This couple, they got married, so well they did agree. This couple, they got married, and why not you and me? Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know. Oh, Roma Lily, oh, my darling, you don't know.
Jackie went a-sailing.
I know they're in that great tradition of folk songs in which women dress up as men to go to battle. There's an awful lot of them.
Yeah.
And it did happen, you know. It
must have.
It did happen a lot. Yeah. Hey, Elizabeth Leprell, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And Andy Kershaw was talking to Elizabeth Leprell at her home in Virginia, as you heard. Elizabeth mentioned that Andy was also going to visit her teacher, the singer Sheila Kay Adams, and that's our Appalachian session next week on World on Three. And of course, all our World on Three sessions are available to download as podcasts from the Radio 3 website. Just follow the links to the World Music pages.
And so to a trail that was etched in the Appalachian Mountains 100 years ago by English folk song collector Cecil Sharp. In the summer of 1916, in search of something to supplement his income during the tough times of the First World War, Cecil Sharp, along with his trusty collaborator Maud Karpeles, headed off to America to give lectures and talks on folk music and to seek out English folk songs that had survived in some of the more remote parts of the country. Well, in January of this year, Andy Kershaw went to America to follow in this great man's footsteps. What I have for you right now is a feature-length session that is part of Andy's series. And it takes place in Hot Springs, Madison County, North Carolina, with balladeer and storyteller Sheila Kay Adams.
Awake, awake, you drowsy sleeper. Awake, awake, it's almost dawn. How can you lie and sleep and slumber when your true love's going far away? Say, my love, go ask your mother If you my bride can be. If she says no, love come and tell me, and I'll no more come worry thee. I'll not go and ask my mother, for she lies on her bed at rest, and in her hands she holds papers that will speak to my distress. Oh, love, go and ask your father. If you my bride can be. If he says no, love, come and tell me. It'll be the last time I'll bother thee. Oh, I'll not go and ask my father, 'cause he lies on his bed at rest, and in his hand he holds a weapon to kill the man I love the best. Oh, I'll go down in some lone valley and spend my weeks, my months, my years, and I'll eat nothing but green willow, and I'll drink nothing but my tears. Come back, my own true lover. Come back, in grief cried she, and I'll forsake both mother and father, and I'll cry love and pity thee.
Tremendous. That was Sheila Kay Adams with a song called Awake, Awake, and Sheila's the great-grandniece of Mary Sands, who contributed 25 songs to Cecil Sharp's Appalachian collection, including that one. And Sheila has also written the preface to the latest publication of The Book, as she calls it, which is, of course, Cecil Sharp's English Folk Songs of the Southern Appalachians. Sheila, tell us about that song.
I learned Awake, Awake from a singer over home by the name of Dillard Chandler. He was a first cousin to the woman that I call Granny.
And what do we know, what do you know, about your great-great-aunt, have I got that right, Mary Sands?
Mary Sands. Well, it was kind of funny because my granny remembered Sharp coming through, and her sister remembered him coming through.
What did they have to say about it?
Well, they didn't sing for him because Burzill, Granny's older sister, decided that he was a German spy. You know, because he wore a white suit and talked funny, and they decided he was a German spy, so they didn't sing for him. But the last time I think that he came to see her, she was about 8.5 months pregnant. And she said that he was a perfect gentleman, and the woman that was with him was a very nice, soft-spoken woman, and they were probably took up. That's what... That's what the story was passed down through my family, is that there was something going on besides him, you know, and her just recording the songs.
And when did you first become aware of the book? Was it a very important thing in your family? Because Mary had got songs in it and her name in it, I presume.
It was talked about a lot, but I did not see an actual copy of the book until I was a student at Mars Hill College in the early 70s. And when I took it out of the library and took it back home, I wish you could have seen all of my family gathered around pointing out all these different people that were listed in the book. Oh, looky there, so-and-so. That Why, she was my first cousin, you know. I mean, just wonderful stories. And then was when they started saying, oh, I remember when they come through here, and I wouldn't sing for them. But now, my great aunt Zephora Rice did sing for him. She lived to be 112 years old.
Wow.
And she remembered him. Her mind was as clear as it could be. And she remembered the day where they sat on the porch, what song she sang for him. And she said, I sung that old Seven Nights Drunk, but I'll bet you a nickel to a dollar he only printed four of the verses. And she was exactly right. He did not print all seven verses.
Go on, tell us why.
Well, because it goes south pretty soon after the fourth verse.
It's a bit lewd, is it?
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's a bit vulgar. You know, there's a line you just don't cross, and I think Sharp was very conscious of that line. But
so he was cleaning them up, these songs,
as
he was jotting them down.
Yes, he was.
Hmm. So will you do a Seven Nights Drunk, Sheila?
Will
it be Four Nights Drunk?
I will do the Four Nights Drunk. I'll sing for you the Four Nights Drunk. I come home the other night as drunk as I could be. And I saw a horse standing in the stable where my horse ought to be. Said, come here, little wifey, explain this thing to me. Whose horse is that standing in the stable where my horse ought to be? You blind fool, you drunk old fool, now can't you plainly see? Well, that's only a milk cow your granny sent to me. Well, I've traveled this whole world over 100 times or more, but a saddle on a milk cow's back I never did see before. I come home the other night as drunk as I could be, and I saw a hat hanging on the rack where my hat ought to be. Said, come here, my little wifey, explain this thing to me. Whose hat is that a-hanging on the rack where my hat ought to be? You blind fool, you drunk old fool, now can't you plainly see? Well, that's only a dish rag your granny sent to me. Well, I've traveled this whole world over 100 times or more, but a J.B. Stetson dish rag I never did see before. I come home the other night as drunk as I could be, and I saw some breeches laying on the floor where mine ought to be. Said, come here, little wifey, explain this thing to me. Whose breeches is that laying on the floor where mine ought to be? You blind fool, you drunk old fool, now can't you plainly see? Well, that's only a flour sack your granny sent to me. Well, I've traveled this whole world over 100 times or more, but a zipper on a flour sack now I never did see before. I come home the other night as drunk as I could be, and I saw a head laying on a pillar where my head ought to be. Said, come here, little wifey, explain this thing to me. Whose head is that laying on the pillar where my head ought to be? You blind fool, you drunk old fool, now can't you plainly see? Well, that's only a cabbage head your granny sent to me. Well, I've traveled this whole world over 1,000 times or more, but a mustache on a cabbage head I never did see before. And you can use your imagination on the other thing.
Very good. You say an interesting thing in the preface that you've written to Cecil Sharp's English Folk Songs of the Southern Appalachians, the collection, about a generation that came at the end of World War II that consciously, deliberately rejected these songs, this culture. Why did they do that?
Well, my mother was born in 1916 over in this little community called Sodom, where Mary Sands would have been from.
It was really called Sodom.
It was really called Sodom. And when World War II came along, Mama said that she had learned in college that her accent people would make fun of. And so she taught herself how to talk like everybody else so that she wouldn't be made fun of. And she said, we threw our traditions away with both hands because we associated all those old songs, the way we talked, you know, the way that our parents lived their lives. We associated all of that with that intense poverty that we grew up in. And she said, so to sing those old songs was just, you know, moving that poverty along with us as we went about our life.
So the people of the mountains were ridiculed by those in the cities, and eventually those mountain people came to reject even their own traditions.
Absolutely.
And when did that change again? When did you again start to feel proud of these traditions and value them once more?
In the 60s, when the folk revival took place,
right.
And people like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez started singing songs that... And by that time, there was a radio, at least, in everybody's house there around home.
Well, many of the songs Dylan sang in his, certainly in his early coffee house years,
right,
came and from this were, part of the world.
Right, they were the old traditional ballads, and Joan Baez, the same thing. And so when my family started hearing these old songs being sung in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, on the radio, Granny, I remember plainly her saying, why, they're not singing that song right. And she started singing the same song, only sung the entire thing. And I was just blown away. And then there was, you know, kind of, like I said, the folk revival. And then in the 70s, they started encouraging what Granny called real people to come out of the woodwork, so that they could send them off up to the Smithsonian Folklife Festival in 1976 with all of these old traditions and everything.
And that happened, did it?
Yes, it did. We celebrated our 200th birthday,
yeah.
And they had this
the
big
United
festival.
States, yeah.
Right. And they had the Smithsonian Folklife Festival on the Mall in Washington, D.C., and all of the ballad singers that were singing from over home got to go up to Washington, D.C. and sing on stage.
Wow. And how would you say it's regarded today, the tradition, having almost vanished at the end of the Second World War, then a revival in the 60s? Where are we now?
There's a resurgence of interest in the oral tradition and the ballads and everything. I think part of it is just because young people especially are getting kind of tired of canned music that they hear on the radio, and they're going looking for something real again.
What part did the church play at one stage in trying to wipe out this music?
Oh, the church played a big part in...
Because Cecil Sharp, in his diaries, there are numerous hostile references to the church. He didn't like at all what the church was doing, did he?
No.
And what did they try to do with the music?
Well, there was a lot of... anti-singing of the old love songs, because the church said that brought people together to drink liquor and fornicate. And so they wanted that stopped. And they then said, well, you can't sing any songs unless they're sacred songs. You have to quit singing them old love songs. So that within itself almost wiped out. And I think it did wipe out this tradition, oral tradition, in a lot of communities. But over in Sodom, Granny said there was a circuit-riding preacher came, and she said he got up and gave a sermon about how singing anything other than these sacred songs was bad for the soul and all this, that, and the other. And she said that the church house was packed full of people. Well, when he came back the next Sunday, there wasn't a soul there. And so I think that's partly why the songs survived in this little community of mine over there, is because people just said, oh, that's just BS. I'm not going to pay any attention to that. We've been singing these songs since forever.
Not for nothing was it called Sodom.
That's exactly right.
Sing us another one, Sheila. What have you got for us?
Well, the one I'd like to do is kind of special to me, that Sharp collected from Mary Sands in August, right around August the 6th, 1916. It's called My Dearest Dear, and the reason it's special to me is because right across the ridge from where Sharp was collecting from Aunt Mary Sands, my grandmother was giving birth on that day to my mother.
Wow, same day.
Yeah, same day.
And you've done something with this song over the years. Has it been passed down through your family?
Right. What I've done with the song is I play in a string band called Sheila K. Adams and the Scofflaws. And the guitar player, Dan Lewis...
Who is here.
He came to the house one evening and he said, I want you to listen to what I've done with some accompaniment for My Dearest Dear. And at first I thought to myself, oh, I don't know about putting accompaniment to any of these old songs. But then when I heard him do it, I said, absolutely. It fits wonderfully well. It's absolutely beautiful.
the great Sheila Kay Adams, accompanied by Dan Lewis on guitar, who arranged that version of My Dearest Dear. And that was a feature session that Andy Kershaw did as part of his Appalachian Sessions. What fabulous tales of family songs and good old Southern plain speaking. You can still hear Andy's Sunday feature, Cecil Sharp's Appalachian Trail, via the Radio 3 website. And of course, this feature-length session as well, you can listen to again for the next 30 days. And I do believe that of the series of the Appalachian Trail, you can in fact download them as a podcast.